Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're gonna get Amin in those, so you gotta listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, aka Wozni Lambre, and I'm joined once again back for the first time in 2024. Nando Vila, what's up, bro?
Happy New Year. It's great to be back. How's your break?
Fantastic. I spent all of it in New York City. Was there for 3.5 weeks, enjoyed myself. But I am happy to be back in the lovely, inviting, sunny confines of Los Angeles, California.
It isn't bad. It isn't bad out here.
Not bad at all. We're going to jump right into it, man. Right before we hopped on this, Nando sent me a link to a news story. The U.S. and its allies have struck Houthi forces in Yemen. Of course, those same Houthis like tried to enact an embargo on the seas. There's been fighting on the seas with these fools for weeks now. Last week, it should be noted that Israel bombed the shit out of some Hezbollah leaders in Lebanon. Like, they're just expanding this war effort. Of course, you're not going to see Joe Biden or anybody try to make the case for it in public. They just do this shit. They don't have to consult with Congress, which we can get into this. But like, I was talking to my buddy Ethan about this, how the Democrats love to be like, we're the saviors and guardians of democracy. Nothing democratic about this. Joe Biden and his regime just basically act as dictators. They do whatever the fuck they want, specifically when it comes to war. Anyway, that's neither here nor there, the hypocrisy of these saviors of democracy types. And yeah, it just looks like this shit is getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
Well, that was, you know, that's the big worry, is that this situation in Israel-Palestine can turn into a broader regional war. And you get the sense that Israel would like it to become a broader regional war, at least the political leadership of Israel. You can imagine, you know, it's the tale as old as time that if, you know, if you're a right-wing president, war is always good for your internal
position. It's great to like, you know, get people on the nationalism vibe. Yeah. Like, we got to rally behind the flag. That's always a good word.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, there was the attack on the two Hamas leaders in southern Lebanon. You know, Israel has been bombing southern Lebanon since October 7th, pretty consistently. A couple of journalists were killed in southern Lebanon as well, as a result of Israeli attacks. And, you know, there's the whole situation in the Red Sea. And I don't mean to make light of the situation, but I mean, the Houthi rebels are, you know, these are battle hardened dudes after years of a very long war, supported by the U.S. with Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
Like in the Saudi supported regime within Yemen, right? You know, so like, you know, what's another, you know, what's a little bit more fighting for guys who've been just
battle hardened fighting for years,
and they were actually disrupting so many commercial shipping lanes in the Red Sea. You could, you know, people were sharing on Twitter these kind of shipping tracker maps. And you could see just global commerce just going around the Horn of Africa and the Cape of the Cape of Good Hope, instead of going through the Red Sea up into to the Suez Canal, because like they were just scared of these Houthi rebels. So I guess it was only a matter of time before the U.S. was like, you cannot interrupt the flow of commerce. We're going to bomb your shit. So but again, I mean, the real you know, worry is that these hostilities would bring Hezbollah into the fight, which it has not. Like, they've been bombing southern Lebanon and Hezbollah has not entered the fray, which I think, you know, says a lot about, I don't know, the level of restraint. I mean, I don't know, like they're literally just bombing their country and they're not entering the fight. and obviously Iran. The Houthis, Hezbollah, and Iran are all kind of friendly regimes, right? They're all friendly to each other. Obviously, they all have their own internal political situations, but let's more or less, you can more or less lump them together in a kind of...
Yeah, they're all kind of pretty much hate the Saudis for the most part. And the UAE is, you know, they've sort of allied themselves with the Saudis, but they're not even, you know, natural bedfellows themselves because the Saudi regime is so hardline Islamic, whereas the UAE, they fancy themselves as a little bit more westernized, a little bit more secular, right?
They like to go to the nightclubs in New York City and, you know, and
they like to partake in red light districts around the world. We know what their bag is.
They like to offer like Instagram girls like a yacht trip in Croatia. Yeah. If you've ever known a hot Instagram girl, they've been approached by someone from the UAE.
Oh my God, of course. And that was, you know, this is a diversion, but that's like a trope in like, you know, you see a hot chick going to UAE, you're just like, oh, did she, you know, get paid how much money to do terrible sex acts with these terrible oil sheiks and princes? But that's neither here nor there. But yeah, it just seems like the hostilities seem to be just going further and further. And, you know, I was reading my man Spencer Ackerman, God bless him, his Forever Wars newsletter. He's like, well, you know, we could just stop bombing the shit out of stuff and just come to the table and end this. That's an idea.
That's never on the table, though, is it?
And again, and we, you know, we rag on the mainstream media all the time. There's nobody on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News making that case that we should just stop the warring, stop the bombing, come to the table,
and just, you know, end it.
deal with our quote unquote enemies, our adversaries, as if they are human beings who can be reasoned with.
Yeah. No, it's peace is never like when it's like something must be done. Peace is never the answer. And, you know, it's always with the benefit of hindsight, and they sort of never learn. But if you look at all the conflicts in the past 30, 40 years, whatever, you just go through each one, and each one, restraint and peace would have been a much better course of action than what was undertaken, you know, whether that was, you know, obviously Iraq and Afghanistan, the two obvious examples. Like, yeah, we could have just not done that, you know, done something else.
We could have just not done that. And man, and again, I think they got it so sweet, the neocons and the warmongers, in the sense that, you know, and Danny so smartly brings this up all the time, DB, friend of the show, the third woke bro. He's like, one, it's a volunteer military force.
Yeah.
So it just feels like something that nobody's, everyday Americans don't even have to consider it. Your niece, your nephew, your brother, your child just isn't over there. It's all voluntary, right? That's a one. And then a two is that it's abroad. Like, it's not happening in Wichita. It's not happening on the borders of Queens and Brooklyn or the Upper West Side. It's not happening in Los Angeles. Like, it's out of sight and out of mind. The people who actually have to go fight these wars, in so much as it's part of our volunteer force, a lot of this shit gets privatized. You know what I mean? So it's not even army dudes, people that are enlisted. It's like these mercenary groups that get paid to get these government contracts to go out there and do God knows what, be held accountable by no government in existence, right? And of course, you know, I'm reading some shit the other day, and I think the New York Times, where it's like, oh, it's our job to rebuild Gaza. And guess who's going to get those freaking contracts? Our tax money to these private entities that go up and build back up Gaza after those places were bombed at our behest. It's just like they're getting it from every single end. It's really amazing.
Yeah. I was thinking about it today. I was trying to wonder how the reaction here would be amongst the CNN class and whatever, had October 7th happened under Trump. You know what I mean?
Think about how weird that would be. The never Trump, the resistance, yada, yada, yada. Some people think that more libs would have had to align themselves against the war. I don't actually subscribe to that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But it would have been just a funny thing to witness, you know, your Dick Durbins of the world, like standing with the president on this. Like, it would just be such a weird thing to witness. Like, it would be a weird news event to process. It would be different,
but ultimately I think we'd be giving the Israelis
Nothing would fundamentally be different. Like, the billions would flow, the aid, the support, the blah blah blah, all that stuff would not be questioned. It would just be kind of interesting to see all the libs kind of get in line with the president.
They're so in lockstep with this shit. That's why I'm just like, I don't know, man. The uniformity of the messaging is kind of insane.
Yeah.
You know, like, where it's like, man, I don't know. I don't know if the Democrats, like Chuck Schumer, would be like, Trump's not doing enough. Yeah. If that wouldn't be the response, not that, oh, we need to ease into this. It would be like, no, Trump needs to go harder for Israel. He's not going hard enough. You know, like, I don't know. Because, you know, just think about some of the wars that Obama got into and how they had to equivocate and fake intellectualize it. Like, you know, what they did with Gaddafi. It wasn't this. They didn't just get up and be like, we're doing this shit because it's the right thing. They felt a need to make a case for why they were doing it. And Barry was like, we're not putting troops on the ground and blah, 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 blah. They went out of their way to explain why this was the course of action to take. They didn't do any of that shit with this. They don't do any of that. They're just like, we're supporting this. We're giving it the full-throated support. There is no room for any other interpretation besides this is the perfect idea. So yeah. I don't know. I understand it. I've heard people say this, like, man, if Trump was leading this charge, a lot of libs would force themselves to critique this thing.
I don't think it would be meaningful. But like, okay, but even now with Biden, you're seeing what I find kind of interesting is that, like, the Pod Johns have abandoned the president on this issue.
What's the Pod Johns?
Your crooked media type, Jon Favreau.
Ooh, they're against this.
They're not like
pom pom waving,
but they're pretty vocal on Twitter about like, you know, this can't be supported in this way with this, you know, with no strings attached, like, you know, like. Mm. And I mean, there's obviously very clearly a generational issue within the Democratic Party. I mean, you're seeing Biden's poll numbers. I mean, I don't know if you looked at this shit, Laz. I mean, it is fucking bananas, dude. Like,
I mean, every time somebody's talking about Biden and his positioning in this race, it's, and they're like, you know, lib or left or whatever, it's just panic, pure panic. I haven't looked at the numbers myself. Dude, it's just everybody. Like,
he's
even the
underwater with Trump. He's underwater with Trump with young people who he won by like 35 points in 2020. Yeah,
that's insane.
He's underwater with Hispanics. Like, he's like fewer, you know, like, he's underwater with Hispanics and his black support is cratering. You know, I mean, it's still very high because black voters support.
Black people love Joe Biden. Everybody knows that.
But I think it's very clearly a kind of, you know, I mean, obviously there's all the issues, but I think I really think you can't separate it from the war in Gaza. Like, I mean, I think that is just like it, this whole situation. Here's what I tell people, even people who disagree with me on the issue. The president looks weak on this issue. And that is what people really don't want. It's not so much where he would have stood on the issue, as long as he projected a feeling of strength and having command of the situation. And he just looks like overwhelmed by the situation, and that is what I think is causing a lot of his.
It clearly feels like Netanyahu and the Israelis are dictating terms to him and his regime.
Yeah,
which is like, yeah, you look weak. There's no leadership. Nobody thinks you're leading this. Nobody thinks you're like out in front of this. Everybody thinks you're just like, no, like they want to do that, so we're saying okay. Yeah. Which, like you said, just looks bad. It looks terrible. And it's ill because you hear these things that Biden fancies himself a Middle East expert. So, you know, there's some of the domestic stuff, especially like some of the labor stuff. He knows that he's not been great on it in the past, and he's taken cues from people that are to his left on it because he's been like, you know what? I haven't always been this pro sort of worker, working man type of thing. And he's listened to other people. You see what he's doing with the antitrust and that kind of thing. These domestic issues, you could tell he's not going with his traditional Joe Biden mode of handling it there. But with this Israel thing, like people say, like, no, Joe Biden thinks he's a Middle East expert and he don't need help. He doesn't need advice. His instincts for him are the right ones.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, this shit just when you think this stuff can't get any more dire, it just gets worse and worse by the day. But we move on to something.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer. And I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, not quite as dire or pressing, but you wouldn't know that if you only paid attention to blue check Twitter in the media. And that's this fight over the quote unquote war on DEI, Nando. Me being the Ringer's resident DEI
hire
employee hire. Yeah. I feel very empowered.
Yeah, yeah, the affirmative action hire. Everyone knows that, dude.
Everybody knows that. Everybody knows I was in affirmative action. You know,
Bill Simmons was feeling the heat, dude. And
New York Times got in his ass and he said, "Where can I get the first black guy?" And it was me. But anyway, I'm watching this play out on Twitter. And I said this on, it's just crazy how this works out. Like, obviously, liberals are just like really, like, liberals of every stripe think that DEI is one of the most sacred and important issues of our time, which is fucking hilarious, which is, you know, the example that we always give on this show. Like, it's literally this idea that there needs to be representation on the board of Goldman Sachs and Disney. Because that's
in Harvard.
Yeah. Because that's what's going to be the salvation of disaffected, marginalized people in America. It's going to be representation at the most elite of elite institutions. Like the hyper elite, right? And they're just, and of course, conservatives, they have their reasons to hate on this. But you know what I notice about conservatives that they're good at? They're so good when they realize the libs don't have a coherent argument for something. And whether they believe it or not, like this anti-DEI kind of goes with the conservative mindset, but they recognize they can smell blood in the water that like your argument for this shit is not coherent whatsoever.
Yeah. It's got holes. Yeah.
And they're losing their minds on this everywhere. You know, the normal guys like Chait and, you know, all these people, liberal media. But like, you know, somebody like Mark Lamont Hill, who is, you know, full disclosure, that's Jerv's mans. I've done his show. I like the guy. But he put out a tweet that said Harvard must replace Claudine Gay with a black woman. That was the tweet. And I read that and I was, and like, you know, the implication being like, I don't know that like, this is somehow a issue that concerns the black masses. When the truth of the matter is it only concerns the black elite, like,
yeah,
like exclusive.
It is an intra-elite spat. And by the way, Claudine Gay plagiarized, like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, she
did. I mean, the motivation for the investigation was dubious and actually it was like it actually Claudine Gay suppressed pro-Palestinian protests at Harvard. I mean, like, this is what like what's insane about this whole situation is that she was not some radical, you know,
she just got kind of wrong-footed
on the congressional floor, answered clumsily, it seemed like a very lawyered up, but she, like, let's be clear, like on campus the Harvard administration was hostile to Palestinian protesters. Like, this is not, you know. And so the motivation for her investigation was obviously dubious, but they found the thing. And she, it seems pretty clear that she plagiarized. And you cannot be the president of Harvard and have like a really credible plagiarism scandal on your like, fucking thing.
None of your students are allowed to, like, that's like, but rule number one, you tell every single college student, like, bro, you can't do this. You have to cite your sources. Like, this is foundational to like the activity of colleging. Like, this is it. So obviously they got her with cause. It's just and Mark is not the only person that expressed that sentiment. But like again, for me, somebody needs to explain to me. What black people, who are the black people whose lives, whose, you know, trajectory has been improved by Claudine Gay's presidency at Harvard? Like, how can you make that argument that this is an issue that affects the masses of black people? Like, how? It's Harvard.
Yeah. Well, the liberal argument forever on the way out of poverty for the working, like for poor people, is education. That education is the pathway to a better life, and that is absolutely true on an individual level, you know. Like, if you have kids, you should obviously encourage them and try to get them to go to college. And yes, it's obviously true at an individual level. The problem with that is that college, and specifically like the Ivy League or an elite college, are elite for the very reason that they're exclusionary. If they're for everyone, they can no longer be.
They can't be elite. Like, the this quality that like makes it inaccessible is the point.
Yes.
Like, the point of this school is that it's inaccessible to the masses. Like, that's why, that's its entire reason for being.
Right.
So it can never be something that concerns itself with the masses of the people. And so I'm sorry if 100 less black kids get to be
half,
in the,
half of whom are like the granddaughters of like some African prince,
first of all. So I learned this in real time talking to Ethan 2 days ago. One, Claudine Gay is Haitian American. Didn't know that.
Yeah. She's not.
Her family, however, is like some.
You know, Roxanne Gay is her cousin.
Yes. Roxanne Gay, Hyper Lib, Arthur. I'm good. So Claudine Gay is like some concrete magnate in Haiti. Her family's like Haitian oligarchs. She comes from the oligarchy in Haiti. Like, what the fuck? Like, the idea that this woman loses her job and her life is materially impacted in any way. She's going to get another job that pays her just as much. Probably has just as much status. Like, if not more. Like, she's... Nothing is happening to this lady. She got railroaded. I'm sure this was her dream gig. And I guess black girls across America were supposed to be looking up to this. I really don't know the argument for this shit. But if you're watching it on Twitter, this shit counts for black politics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's what politics has become now, is these kind of intra-elite squabbles. You know what I mean? Like, all of the issues around college campuses are, you know, for whatever merit they may have, they're fundamentally a just kind of intra-elite squabble. Like that, you know, like there's definitely conservatives on campus, and it must be annoying if you're a conservative on campus to like be surrounded by all these fucking, you know, annoying libs. Like, I get it, you know? And like, if you're a liberal on campus, like, it must be annoying that like your college, you know, supports like fucking, you know, is like sponsored by Raytheon and supports like all, I get it. You know what I mean?
Like, supports every single war ever. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And is like just a feeding system for Goldman Sachs and McDonnell Douglas. Like, I mean, I get it, you know? But it is fundamentally an intra-elite squabble. So like this is like why when we're on the left, we see these things and we're just like, you guys, like, shut the fuck up. Like, no one gives a shit, because the path towards, like, everyone should have an education and access to education.
Yes.
Like, the core principle of
yes.
And, like, a strong public education system and even a strong public college system.
And if you
system,
get into that Harvard, stuff. That's very nice for you.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's great. And, yes, it sucks that 100 years ago, it was only white men were allowed to go to Harvard. And yes. So that's, I guess, a small victory for a very small subset of the population. But the real emancipation and the real path out of poverty for the masses is not that. I mean, it's not that. Like, education is a good in and of itself, and people should be educated and empowered and think for themselves. And that's always good in and of itself. But it's not necessarily going to put food on your table if the economy doesn't work for everyone, you know. And right. and the only way the economy works for everyone is like we say all the time, is through a strong, empowered working class through organized labor unions. And that's like, you know, like, that is a fundamental issue. And that's why we've oriented our show around it so much, because like, but it's important to talk about this issue as a way to talk about why it's not important or why you shouldn't care about it that much, because you really don't have to worry about it. If you're not affected by this, don't worry about
so
it.
It's outside not- of the realm of concern for, you know, because you got to think about it. When I think about something like, you know, I don't know if you saw this, but Taraji P. Henson didn't get a private driver on The Color Purple or some job that she had, where I'm like, yeah, you should have had an Uber Black for sure. You deserve that. Like, whatever. And this idea that like, And the reason why they're broadcasting this to the masses of blacks as if this is a black issue, because somehow we're supposed to relate to a black Walmart worker out there. When it's like, yo, how many good acting jobs do you like, the way this industry exists right now? How many people do you think can have like great acting jobs? It's got to be like 2,000?
Yeah, no, it's tiny. Yeah.
Maybe it's got to be something like. And I'm talking about the acting job specifically, because that's what Taraji P. Henson does. It's got to be like 2,000.
Yeah.
How I don't know why or how I should compare that to Amazon workers and Walmart workers and McDonald's workers and like the masses of people who get up and go to work every day.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. Like, yes, I want your job. Okay, but here's
you're onto something that's interesting because, you know, obviously I work in Hollywood, and, you know, a few years ago, you'll remember there was this really, really aggressive push to diversify Hollywood. I think,
well, Oscar's so white. I remember
it started with Oscar so white. And then that bled into the George Floyd thing. And that led into like a huge push to diversify Hollywood. And I obviously work mostly more in the Hispanic space, but that they, you know, Hispanic and Latino issues were included in that whole push. And what ended up happening, there was this kind of well-meaning effort to diversify Hollywood. So they wanted to give more jobs both in front of and behind the camera to marginalized communities, et cetera, et cetera. You've heard all the terms. What ends up happening in actuality is because the vast majority of marginalized people are marginalized and don't go to Harvard, you know, and don't go to, you know, the places.
Bro, all it means is Donald Glover and Lena Waithe get more jobs. That's it.
Or like a Mexican rich kid, or, you know what I mean?
Like, that's it. The people who are going to get these jobs are proximate to the elite. I need to find this Cornel West fucking clip that I had posted years ago. I mean, during 2020. And he was doing an interview and he was talking about, talking about the blacks and the diversity and blah, blah, blah. He's like, I'm going to give you a prediction. The masses of black people will not be helped by this push. But you know who will? He said, the black bourgeoisie. And I was like, yes.
And there isn't a Latino bourgeoisie the same way there is a black bourgeoisie. It's just different. That's, but what ends up happening, they just end up importing them from Latin America. They import the Latin American bourgeoisie, who are all educated and who all speak English perfectly, right, and who all went to the
people from elite society in Brazil and Argentina.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yes, these are the people that they call their quote unquote diversity hires. So I think Claudine Gay, the way they attacked her was like fucked up. It was right wing attack mob. At the same time, libs. Remember when we told you to relax on the canceling shit? Eventually, they start canceling people you like, too. And guess what? The establishment, the powers that be, they're going to be in a much better position to cancel people than we ever will.
Well, this one has been hilarious because, right, the guy who led the charge for the canceling of Claudine Gay was this guy.
Yeah, his wife is also a plagiarist.
And now they're digging his wife.
It's a never-ending cycle.
I've been meaning to talk to Danny about this because I'm not in academia, but like, man, I'm guessing that because it's like all these people came up as academics, like post the internet, like I'm guessing they all plagiarized.
Of course.
Because when you have the internet, like, I don't know, it just probably is so easy to, you have access to so many more sources and all that shit. Like, it's probably so much easier to fall into the temptation. And I'm not saying they do it like in a nefarious way, but I'm saying like if you took a fine tooth comb to any of these people, I'm sure you'll find, just because, you know, I wonder if that's the case, that if you really want to, like, basically all academics are now kind of screwed because like you could plausibly make a plagiarism argument for almost all of them because of.
And this is the thing. And we can end off on this because this is a year since this happened, this convo I had. It was All-Star Weekend in Salt Lake City. I was talking to these two Afro-Latina women that I met at a Hennessy party out there. And we got to talking. They asked me where I work and I asked them where they work. And these women worked at Goldman Sachs. And they were like the hugest proponents of this DEI shit. And I was like, guys, how is Goldman Sachs? Like, y'all know what y'all company's job, like what they're
the most evil company, like, yeah.
How can Goldman Sachs make their mission about diversity? And their argument was essentially trickle down for liberals.
Economics. Yeah, trickle down economics.
Black people are going to get on the board and then they're going to put other black people on. And those black people are going to do what? They're going to do the mission of Goldman Sachsing. There's no...
In any oppressive system, the best way to oppress a population is to dole out a handful of goodies to some of the smartest and most industrial people of that oppressed class. And then they turn around and they're the fucking meanest ones to...
Period.
This has always been the case.
So, like, when I sat there and I heard Goldman Sachs employees, I'm like, yo... And I did find some common ground with them. I was like, yo, let's just say the board at y'all job got 20% blacker tomorrow. What would fundamentally change about your job? They thought about it and they said, absolutely nothing.
The logic of capital is the same. You know,
it doesn't matter who's operating the levers.
Guys. If they don't do it to maximize the profit, they'll just get replaced by some other black woman. You know what I mean? Like,
there's only one way to do exploitation. Like, it doesn't matter who's doing it. Like, the name of the game is exploitation. Like, there's no equitable way to exploit. Like, it just doesn't exist. And anyway, man, I know if you're listening to Woke Bros that you've noticed this chatter online about we're mourning the death of DEI, and Mark Cuban is doing Twitter threads about DEI and its importance. And
that's just like him and Elon Musk fighting about this shit. I'm like, I give
Black Woke Bro listeners, permission to completely ignore that topic. It doesn't fucking matter for the masses of black people. It literally doesn't move the needle. Anyway, I just thought we would talk about it because it's in the news. I'm happy to be back. Obviously, we're back from our break. We will see you guys next week. Peace to my man John Gervais on the ones and threes, keeping the trains running on time. Peace out, y'all.
All right.